test.
Good afternoon, everyone. Apologies for the late start, but we were late getting back for our site inspections. I can formally declare this meeting of the Inner West Local Planning Panel open. In doing so, it is appropriate that, on behalf of the Council, I acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation on whose country we are meeting today, their elders past and present. In commencing these meetings, it's appropriate for us to introduce ourselves so that you know who we are. I'm David Lloyd. I'm a lawyer. I'm a QC. I'm a former judge of the Land and Environment Court. I'm a former acting judge of the Supreme Court, and I'm currently a professor of law at Western Sydney University. Ms. Morrell.
Good afternoon, Jan Morrell. I'm a member of this panel, expert member, and I also sit on a number of panels in the Sydney region and chair a number of local planning panels. Prior to this, I was a commissioner with the Land and Environment Court for 14 years. Thank you.
Good afternoon, I'm Lindsay Day. I'm a consulting planner. I have my own practice with a mix of local government and private sector clients. As well as this panel, I'm on the Lane Cove and Bayside panels. I'm a corporate member of the Planning Institute of Australia, and I think my experience is close to 40 years, but I'd rather not say that too often.
My name's Heather Wharton. I'm the community representative on the panel. I live in Ashfield. I'm a planning consultant, so I'm also a qualified planner, and I've worked in councils and local government, and I work mostly in local government planning.
As you can see from the composition of the panel, we are all experts in particular fields, and we are, I have to say, independent of the council. We are not council employees, and we bring our independent minds and expertise to bear upon the matters we have before us. With that, we can move on to the next item, declarations of interest, and there are none. So the first matter we have to deal with is item number one, 168 Norton Street, Leichhardt. This is the proposed residential accommodation for seniors and associated community use and a new retail shop fronting Norton Street. We have inspected the site of this proposal earlier in the day and visited the homes of some of the objectors. We have notice of a number of people who wish to speak on this item, and I will call on whoever wants to go first. Who wants to go first? Please come forward.
Yeah. And just turn the microphone on, please.
That's it. For the record, your name and address.
So my name's Antoinette Botman, and I live on 8 Macaulay Street, Leichhardt.
All right. We visited your house earlier in the day.
You did, yeah.
You have precisely 3 minutes.
Okay. So as the owner and resident of a property on 8 Macaulay Street, neighbouring this development proposal on 168 Norton Street, but also on behalf of 10 other neighbouring residents on Macaulay Street and Carlisle Street, I would like to address the panel. In principle, we are in agreement with the objections of the development to cater for affordable housing, but we do not agree with a number of the design features and request appropriate solutions. We would appreciate the planning panel to listen to our concerns for how this development is affecting our community and call upon them to assess the DA against the principles of reasonableness and fairness and consider to refuse the DA in its current form or seek amendments in the interest of the residents and in the interest of the community. There are three main points of concern that we as neighbours would like to point out. Mr. Carlos Oliveira, who's behind me, will talk to the impact of the location of the car park, which will lead to increased traffic in the laneway, with an impact on the safety and other aspects of our neighbourhood. I would like to talk to the issues around loss of visual and acoustic privacy on our private open spaces, but also our main living rooms at the back of the house. Another of our neighbours, Mr. Mel Watson, was registered to talk to the point of waste management, but unfortunately he is unwell today, and he has asked me to talk on his behalf. I hope that you will be granting his allocated time to me. So From our living rooms and backyards, we currently face a 3/4-storey building which has no windows or balconies facing us. The proposed development will be a 5/6-storey building with a courtyard or a communal open space on the ground floor, which will be directly behind 4 single-level Federation-style houses along Macaulay Street. The wall separating people in this courtyard from our gardens is only 1.2 metres high, which we feel is not appropriate attempt to reduce the amenity impact on surrounding residents. The apartments on the 1st to 4th floors designed around this courtyard all have balconies too that also cause significant issues of overlooking due to absence of louvers or other screening devices. This also applies to the apartments on the western side, on the laneway side of the development. The development proposes to provide visual privacy screening measures via planter boxes for both issues. These boxes are low, 60 centimetres in height, and planting by itself will not suffice to provide sufficient privacy if this is being solely relied upon as a privacy measure. Landscaping should not be relied on as a sole protection against overlooking of neighbours. Overlooking that arises out of poor design is not acceptable. So we have requested appropriate amendments to this design in order to protect our privacy, such as increasing the height of the courtyard wall to a minimum of 1.8 metres, typical fences sizes, or finding less intrusive location for this courtyard.
That is your 3 minutes.
Am I allowed to talk on Mel's points?
Because you're talking on behalf of your neighbour who can't be here, you can continue.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Just continue on my last line. We also request appropriate screening measures be designed to block overlooking from balconies and windows on the higher floors, both to the north and western side of the development. Regarding the acoustic privacy issues as neighbours, we are concerned with the location of the courtyard and community rooms adjacent to it. Council has recognised these have the potential to negatively impact the privacy of surrounding residences if used for events late at night. They have recommended a condition of consent to preclude the use of this space for organised events between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. and to close the communal doors opening to the courtyard during those hours. We don't know what definition is used for organised events or non-organised events in a building of 50 apartments. Acoustic privacy is defined as containing noise within each dwelling and minimising transmission of external noise. For outdoor open space, including parking, this is usually achieved by orientating those away from adjoining properties or alternatively with the use of acoustic barriers such as solid walls or acoustic fencing. This is not the case for both the noise generated by the courtyard but also the noise generated by the basement car park entry in the laneway. Repetitive noise will be generated by vehicles accessing the car park with automatic metal gate opening and closing, with each car entering with up to 28 vehicle movements an hour in peak hour traffic expected. This will make for significant noise issues for all surrounding residents of Macaulay Street on the north and west, up to number 26 at least, as well as Carlisle Street properties in the laneway. This does not include noise generated by garbage trucks loading garbage inside a car park or delivery trucks offloading deliveries for the retail businesses. This noise may not be regulated by any conditions on the developer. With the car park entry and exit at alternative locations such as Norton Street or Carlisle Street across from the Royal Hotel, significantly fewer acoustic issues would negatively affect the neighbouring residents' amenities. The additional points Mr. Watson had also wanted to make on our behalf included a design of the waste management plans. Council plans to allow Uniting to implement a small truck, a small rigid vehicle, which is still 26 tonnes, to collect waste from the car park basement. A second waste room is proposed adjacent to Carlisle Street to provide for capacity for council to collect waste using a 9.4 metre truck to comply with council's obligations as a fallback solution. The location of this waste room in the Carlisle Street location has the neighbour's preference, as this is unlikely to impact the amenity of the surrounding residents for both the odour and noise aspects of the storage and removal aspects. Thank you.
Before you go, what is the address of your neighbour?
My neighbour lives on 7 Carlisle Street.
7?
Carlisle Street.
Thank you. Is Mr. Oliveira here? For the record, your name and address, please.
Yeah, it's Carlos Oliveira, and I'm from 12 Macaulay Street in Leichhardt.
And we met you on the site also.
That's correct, yes.
You have 3 minutes starting now.
Thank you. Like I said, I live in 12 Macaulay Street, and we have no inherent objection to the development of the site, but do object to the current DA application. Our main objections relate to the proposed vehicle access and egress via the Dunny Laneway. Our specific objections are as follows. Number one, pedestrian safety. There is no requirement for vehicles to be permitted to enter Macaulay Street via the laneway, other than the residents of number 8 and number 10 to access their off-street parking. It's not only dangerous, in my opinion, but very irresponsible to enable an extra 57-plus vehicles to exit the laneway into a blind corner at Macaulay Street. I work from home and I have witnessed a high number of near misses due to the high volume of foot traffic in the street, particularly school kids coming home after school. They walk straight through down the path and cars just fly through that particular intersection. We also request the pedestrian safety concerns be registered and included for public record. Our recommendation is as follows. Remove access to the premises via the laneway and prevent vehicle access to Macaulay Street, except, again, for number 8 and number 10, as stated. This could be achieved by possibly placing a bollard, similar to what is currently available between Marion and Marlborough Streets, on top of the laneway. Point number two, the narrowness of the lane. The laneway at Macaulay Street is a maximum of 3.4 metres. With the bollards on either side, it even reduces that further. There is no provision in the DA to record for a footpath to be placed at that intersection of Macaulay Street. Garbage removal is to occur also by using a small rigid truck, and this also poses a significant risk for pedestrians and also noise issue. Our recommendation is remove access to the premises via the laneway. Point number three, alternate entrance. The Lodge DA states, Council's laneway controls indicator development should have access at the lowest point in the laneway. However, there are numerous examples of other developments on Norton Street where access and egress is via Norton Street. These include 173 to 175 Norton Street, the Palace Cinemas, Norton Street Plaza, 47 to 51 Norton Street, 35 to 45 Norton Street, Burklow Books and Cafe, and La Fiamma Publishing. For our recommendation, we ask that an exception is made to the planning controls in relation to the position of the driveway, with the driveway access moved to either Norton or Carlisle Streets. My final point is increased noise. The increased traffic and noise from the security electronic garage door opening and closing will immediately affect residents of the townhouses in the laneway and those within 2 to 4 premises to the western side of the laneway. Again, our recommendation, move the driveway to either Carlisle or Norton Street, as previously stated. I have lived in Leichhardt for over 45 years. And
I have to stop you there. You've gone well over your 3 minutes.
Okay, that's fine. But
we've got the message.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks very much.
All right.
Thank you for your time.
We have a number of persons on behalf of the applicant who wish to speak. We should hear all the objectors first. Councillor Byrne.
Thank you, Chair. I'm here in my capacity as an elected representative of the residents, and I do wish to briefly provide some context to my involvement in the issue. I was in cahoots with members of the Uniting Church about half a decade ago who were concerned that the site was going to be sold off for purely commercial development. And we were able successfully to propose to Uniting Care that, given they were gifted this land, presumably originally, for a public purpose, that it would be good if they would step back from doing that and consider maintaining it for aged care and affordable housing. So there was a very lengthy, as you'll be aware from reading the reports, very lengthy process that resulted in a rezoning of the site. So I'm certainly not opposed to redevelopment of the site. I was approached by residents a fair way into the DA process who raised with me a range of concerns. Some of them are amenity concerns which are difficult to deal with. Well, they're all difficult to deal with. It's a constrained site. But I do want to focus particularly today on the access, the ingress and egress to the site proposed in the report. I concur with the objectors who have already spoken about the fact that it's just not safe or appropriate to make use of that laneway as the main egress, as the ingress and egress point for the site. I live nearby, not so close that I would need to declare a conflict of interest, but I walk that laneway very regularly, and it's a very confined space. It's already a tight space. It should probably be a shared zone, but it operates that way anyway because you can't really drive your car any faster than 10 kilometres down there without endangering yourself and others. I am quite concerned about what the impacts, about the safety impacts that will be caused by turning that into a significant thoroughfare. Now, I've read and understand the arguments from both the proponent and from the council officers that the topography makes Carlisle Street difficult and that there's a reticence to have a driveway on Norton Street. I still think that both of those would be preferable options to the far more dangerous option of having a very significantly increased number of vehicles going into and out of that laneway day in and day out. And I'd extend that argument to the proposition put forward by the previous speaker that the waste services should also be located on Carlisle Street, if that's possible. Now, I accept I'm not proposing a solution to you, and one of the consequences of councillors having been completely legally prohibited from determining development applications and replaced by yourselves is that, you know, I'm the only councillor who's actually engaged in this issue, and we don't get the same sort of levels of briefings that we used to previously. We're very segregated from the development assessment staff. But I am here to say that I think it's the impact of allowing the proposal to proceed unamended with that laneway as the ingress and egress point is unacceptable in terms of amenity and of safety. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now it's the applicant's turn. Who'd like to go first? I should say we have a particular... speaking for myself, I have a particular interest in hearing from Mr. Morse. Well, let's hear from Mr. Morse first, because that's the real nutty problem here. Mr. Morse is your traffic engineer.
Yes.
You've heard what the residents have said.
Yes.
We'd like to know what your opinion is.
Okay. So, is that better? From the very beginning,
for the record, your name and your profession.
Sure. So Andrew Morse, I'm a partner of PTC, who we are the traffic engineering company that Uniting have brought on board to deal with this application. So I'll address the access location first. I think that's probably the sort of contentious issue that's been raised mostly. So from the very beginning of developing up options for the site, it's clearly our job, and it was our role in this project to assess all of the available options for access, Norton Street, Carlisle, and the rear laneway. Norton Street was really a difficult one in the sense of there are competing challenges there with, you know, needing to keep street activation, but also one of levels. So getting into a lower level or a basement car park from that higher level in the depth of the site. So that moved us to either the rear lane or Carlisle. And we had discussions with council staff at a very early pre-DA stage about the position of the driveway, because there was indication from council that Carlisle Street was the preferred from their point of view. From an engineering point of view, I don't want to just say it was very hard and therefore we didn't do it, but we looked at Carlisle very extensively in terms of locating a driveway where it was both a suitable distance from the laneway and from Northland Street, but also could achieve levels that would comply with the Australian standard on a section of roadway that's essentially climbing up towards Northland Street. There was an impact of that arrangement on the yield of the development as well, which Uniting were clearly cognizant of in terms of wanting to provide as many affordable or aged care units as possible. So they were trying to balance that, but also with these engineering difficulties. We then approached the laneway with a sense of if we have access there, it brings us in at the lower level, which is logical in terms of trying to get the car park down as low as possible. And with a view of how much traffic is this development going to generate. And in the traffic report, we've referred to the RMS guide, so that would, and we haven't altered those figures. We've just taken the peak hour traffic generation that guide suggests, which is 0.4 vehicles per dwelling in the peak hour. That's a really conservative number. I mean, currently, if this was a non-aged development, just a normal apartment development, we'd be applying 0.19, so half the traffic generation for normal commuting traffic. It's fair to say, I think, that this isn't going to generate the 0.4 that the state guidelines suggest, but that's really what we're tied to assessing the development on. So the number of vehicle movements we took in the context of the access location and developed, again, through some discussion, pre-DA discussions with council, some options for mitigating some of the concerns that the council and potentially residents raised. That's why we've introduced things like the passing area at the intersection between the lane and Carlisle Street and the extra widening around the driveway so that we have a compliant driveway as far as the Australian standard is concerned. But then we've also done that short section of widening so that we can allow for cars to pass and have two-way vehicle movements on our driveway. The widening at Carlisle Street within the lane, I took the view that really what the way to view the laneway was more as a driveway scenario rather than a public road design, which would have led to a much more onerous design outcome, was that we adopted a 6-metre length of widening plus the tapers and then proved that through the use of sweat paths to determine that if a vehicle was leaving the laneway as another vehicle was turning in from Carlisle Street, both vehicles could sit within the lane and not within Carlisle Street and pass in the similar way that a private driveway might operate. So putting that all together, the view that we formed in terms of selecting the driveway location was that we could, with the laneway, we have a low traffic volume, we have low traffic speeds because of the geometry of the laneway. It sort of assists in that sense, so that it does behave more like a shared zone environment. In fact, we discussed shared zone options with council during those early stages, and it was felt, and indeed converting the lane to one way in one way, one direction or another. The view then was that no, it should be left as it is other than the widening works that we're proposing. So we came to the conclusion that really the safety is dealt with by the sense that we have clear sight lines, we're at grade, there aren't ramps and things involved in this and shortened sight lines, vehicle speeds are low and the vehicle volumes are low.
Any questions from the panel?
You were talking a lot about the vehicle movements and so on.
Yes.
Did you have any information on actual traffic pedestrian volumes on that street and what the conflicts would be with the traffic and the cars? Like, because it would be good to know, as you heard from the residents, there is a concern about, you know, there is a traffic pathway, a pedestrian pathway, movements along there.
Yeah.
And are there any measures... How is what you propose dealing with the vehicular pedestrian conflicts?
It essentially behaves very much like a shared zone. It's well within the parameters of that RMS adopt for a shared zone. So there are shared areas that have more traffic activity and more pedestrian activity mixing together in the same space. And we're sort of well below those thresholds for applying for a shared zone for RMS. So, and as I say, our volume, even though we've got sort of 26 peak hour movements, adopting the RMS's rates with no adaptation of those, it's essentially going to be either that or much lower during those peak periods. And that's the highest highest hour during the day, not the sort of average throughout the day.
And you know what sort of pedestrian movements are there? I mean, I would have thought that the Norton Street would have been the preferred pedestrian route, but the residents have advised that there are lots of movements up that street. Did you have any information on the pedestrian movements?
Off the top of my head, I don't know. We certainly observations of that lane through the development of the, you know, of our schemes. We did observe people using it, so we know that there was a desire line along there from day one. Along the lane, and clearly there's the three houses on the opposite side as well. So we were cognizant of the fact that it was used. I live in an area that's got similar rear lanes, and they are, you know, they are nice to use, and we were cognizant of that fact. It didn't really alter our view, though, that we could deal with safely with the low volume of traffic that this site's generating. Using sharing that space, as I said, it's at grade, it's level, there's clear sight lines from one end to the other.
I was just going to ask, you mentioned that you considered a one-way situation. Would that provide benefits if it was? I realise there would have to be further approvals from council for that, but would that give some sort of benefit for the traffic conflicts or easing pedestrian conflicts?
The reason we looked at that was because of the existing scenario situation at the Macaulay end of the lane, where there are two property walls in close proximity to the edge of the laneway, so there is restricted sight line, and in fact there is a painted arrow on the surface there that indicates one way, but that's the only traffic control that suggests that. We explored the idea of making it one way in from Macaulay to change that sightline difference, but through discussions with council's officers, it was resolved to leave it as two-way, and that would allow the site to attract and depart traffic onto either Carlisle or to the west.
Wondering, in consideration of, you know, one way on the laneway and so on, whether a really low speed maximum for vehicles was considered or presented, or
it was considered in the context of shared zone when we looked at whether it would become a shared area, and that comes with a 10 kilometer speed limit. So there's certainly there are options to put a lower speed limit. I mean, it probably at the moment sits in the 50k that's applied to the area, but there's certainly scope to apply an independent speed limit to the lane. What we observed on the lane was that its width is the constrainer of speed. So it's one of those situations where it seems illogical to mix people and vehicles in the same space, but if it's done well and it's done right and the space is constrained enough, speed is lowered and that mix can work quite well. And we've got, you know, numerous examples across Sydney now where shared zone features are being put in place of a traditional separated road and footpath as a means of managing vehicles and pedestrians in a low speed, low volume environment.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Please.
Good afternoon, panel. My name is Juliet Grant. I'm the Town Planning Consultant from City Plan Strategy and Development, assisting Uniting on this project.
Yeah, all right. What we are particularly interested in is the potential for overlooking the properties in Macaulay Street.
Yes. We have some sightline sketches that the architect has brought with. I'm were part of the DA package. I'm not sure if you've got all the plans there. It's DA 304 section D, but I can bring copies. Thank you. Is that all, are they all the same?
That's what they're from three different
ones. Oh, okay. What's the easiest way to...
Will you show them to us? Would you show them to the person seated behind you?
Certainly.
Let them have a look first.
They're in your package if you have the plans. It's drawing DA 304.
Yes.
Section D. So we might talk about that separately. Yeah. So.
Do you want me to take them up?
Would you like? So the drawings show the sight lines from that elevated balcony and show that a normal person standing there would be, in fact, looking onto the roof and over rather than directly down. They're all slightly separate, Glenn. Sorry, they're all different.
So there's one from the other side.
Yeah, yep. But Glenn split the bundle.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, Jane's got a copy.
Seems to me that you're not relying on landscaping.
No, you're not.
You're relying on the planter box forming that edge.
Yes, that's right.
I'm happy with that. That's more the main way to save the
Well, they can't look any more.
So let's have a look.
So those sections are taken, not relying on the landscaping, that's from the hard edge of the...
Yes, I understand that.
Did the residents see those drawings?
Yes, they've just been shown.
Okay.
Yes. Mm.
The other concern was sightlines, I think, from the courtyard, and the comment was made that the 1.2 metre high wall was not sufficient to block sightlines. That 1.2 metre wall actually sits upon another 1 metre solid planter box, so it's actually 2.2 metres adjacent to the courtyard, which was raised as a concern.
Do you know what the, or could you tell us what the RL of the courtyard is? It's not marked on the drawings.
So it's 31.5, it's the same as the ground floor level.
Thank you.
Well, we haven't given you an opportunity to speak, but we're concerned with the points raised by the residents. All right, can you turn your mind to those?
Certainly. So clearly the visual privacy was the issue, and I think that we've demonstrated on those sightline drawings that both in terms of sightlines from those raised balconies have been certainly considered in the design. We've ensured there is separation as well as physical barriers away from the boundary, so we're not relying solely on the landscaping to protect that visual impact. And then in terms of the courtyard, again, the misunderstanding in terms of the height of the wall, so hopefully that would address that concern in terms of visual privacy. In terms of acoustic privacy, there's a number of proposed conditions in the consent that relate to construction hours, operation of the shop and use of the courtyard that was mentioned, and we have no objection to those conditions. In terms of noise generated from the traffic, I think Mr. Morse talked about the number of traffic movements being estimated using RMS data, which was on the conservative side. That number of movements at 28 out in a peak hour is considered during 4 to 6 p.m. So at the night time when the noise might be more sensitive, we would be anticipating that at most it would be 3 to 4 vehicle trips during that later night period when somebody might be concerned about the noise of the garage door. So hopefully that addresses that concern. I think the laneway safety issue Mr. Morse also spoke about. I would add that as part of this project, we are proposing to set the building back 3 metres from the current lane. So at the moment, as you would have seen when you drove down there, the vast bulk of the building is hard up with a zero setback. So by providing that 3 metre setback, you actually open up the visual catchment, which would make a feeling of much more openness and enhanced sight lines and safety, so that any vehicle or pedestrian would have a greater visibility of their co-user. We did also talk with council early on about the opportunity to potentially make this a 10-kilometre shared zone, or shared paving, or other alternatives. And that's something that's obviously open to the local traffic committee to continue to investigate if that's considered a suitable arrangement, but not one that we feel is necessarily dependent in order to progress this development. I think the waste management issue is probably the other comment that the residents made, and uniting as an experienced aged care provider is quite used to organising on-site waste collection through smaller vehicles in the basement. The opportunity to use the Carlisle Street frontage for waste collection was pursued at council's request as a backup fallback position if for some reason in the far distant future council was ever called upon to undertake waste collection facilities. That is not the intention for this development. It is just a fallback position, so not one that we feel will actually be activated or cause any impacts. So that probably addresses, I think, the majority of the residents' points that they raised.
Can I just ask one question here? It's only a small question, but in relationship to the waste vehicles, which are small rigid vehicles, I note, is there a restriction on the times in which that can be collected?
That is something that we could most certainly have if we had in terms of operating procedures. Adrian, do you have a usual time that, I mean, it would be out of peak, I would. Yeah, so it's certainly something that could be conditioned. If that was a concern, you could condition those waste collection times and we could accommodate that.
Could I just ask about the nature of the development? We understand from the report that the Uniting is a social housing provider,
yes,
but there's only 15% via a separate VPA of affordable housing units. How does the whole development work?
It's 25%, isn't it? 15%? Do you want to explain how your affordable housing provisions work in under? I might defer to Adrian Ziano from Uniting, who can explain, because that is core business for Uniting. And you describe it much better than I can.
Again, for the record, we need your name, please.
Of course. Adrian Ziano. I'm the head of property development at Uniting.
Thank you. Proceed.
Thank you, panel members, for letting me address the panel today. I've got a bit of a spiel, but I'll just answer your questions if you wish. Your question was in relation to Uniting and its provision of community housing, community and social housing. Uniting is a registered community housing provider. We operate about 3,000 independent living units or retirement village units, and a significant proportion of those are affordable rental accommodation. We have a philosophy of salt and peppering those through the community rather than trying to craft sole community housing villages, which have poor social outcomes typically. Uniting is this particular project forms part of our Social Affordable Housing Fund 1 contract with FACS and government. Uniting has already been delivering a significant proportion as well ahead of all other providers in that particular SAF 1 contract. We were also a successful proponent under SAF 2 and were the only proponent from SAF 1 that was successful under the SAF 2 contract as well with FACS. So it's a space that we're thoroughly committed to. In this particular application, it formed part of the memorandum of understanding with council through the community consultation component up front with the development many years ago, as Councillor Byrne discussed with the panel earlier. And the component of that that was agreed at the time was that we would do 15% affordable housing on this site, and that's formed part of the voluntary planning agreement. And that is something that we're committed to continue to do. And in fact, we have those dwellings forming part of that SAF 1 contract with FACS. So this is a genuine project for Uniting and a genuine affordable housing component here. And we have genuine funding tied up with Social Affordable Housing Fund. And in fact, we're starting to sail fairly close to the wind with delivering that within the timeframes. We've already had to move into the extension timeframes with FACS, who've granted us the extension to deliver this particular project on behalf of that contract. Does that answer your question? Sorry, thanks.
Any other questions? Thank you. And I note that the voluntary planning agreement does specify 15% of the total number of residential units to be affordable housing units. That's there in the voluntary planning agreement itself.
That's right. Yes, that's correct.
I noticed that.
It's tied on the title of the land.
Yep. Yes.
Yep.
Thank you.
So we're very comfortable with those voluntary planning agreement items, as you would imagine. So. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
The only other matter that I would just like to raise would be that if the panel was of a mind to support and approve this proposal, whether there could be consideration given to changing the wording of the deferred commencement conditions to include those as general conditions that would be satisfied prior to issue of a construction certificate. Most of the items there are very simple to technically address and could be conditioned rather than forming an actual deferred commencement. So just a request that the panel consider that option in their deliberations.
I'll just ask a question in that regard. Look, I have looked at those conditions and they don't appear to be too onerous. So is it really something that you press?
No, if the panel would prefer to see them as deferred commencement. We were of the view likewise that they were not onerous and that they could be relatively easily addressed.
Yep.
And we did offer to address them before the panel meeting, but that didn't want to confuse things, so
right. Yeah. Okay, thank you. And I have actually noted that there is a condition 64 about waste collection hours not being allowed between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m.
I notice Mr. Ollerton is also down to speak. I'm not sure that we need to hear from him.
No, that's fine. We just in case.
Thank you. All right. I'm sorry we've held you up. We've come to a decision. And one of the things we are going to do is ask the council's local traffic committee to look at the whole question of traffic and pedestrian interface in the laneway. We can only make that as a recommendation. In coming to our decision, we note the advice that the applicant proposes a three-metre setback of the building from the laneway, which will improve the situation for foot traffic. We note the advice that the numbers of traffic-generating vehicles will be well within the RMS parameters for a shared zone. So, subject to the recommendation we're going to make to the local traffic committee, we feel that the application cannot be refused on the ground of traffic and access. We are satisfied in that respect. The other thing I should say is that we are also satisfied that there will be no overlooking of the properties in Macaulay Street, Leichhardt, from this development, which was a serious concern raised. We think that the design of the proposal removes that concern. So the decision of the panel, which is unanimous, is to adopt the recommendation to grant a development consent subject to the recommended conditions. The panel's reasons for the decision are as follows, and then I'll ask Ms. Day to describe what we are going to recommend to the local planning panel, a local traffic committee. We have to give reasons for decision. The first reason is, one, reasons for decision. One, the development is permissible in the 2B local centre zone and how do you do that? The development is permissible in the 2B local centre zone and satisfies the requirements of all the applicable planning controls. Two. The development will be compatible with the emerging and planned future character of the area. Three, the panel supports the findings contained in the assessment report. And endorses the reasons for the approval contained in that report. Four, for the reasons given above, Approval of the application is in the public interest. Five, the panel recommends the following to the Council's Local Traffic Committee.
May I suggest that we make it by way of comment and not put it as a reason for our decision?
Okay, no. All right. This is not item five. This is a recommendation. All right, Ms. Day.
We need to get the uniting person when I've outlined the possible changes to agree that if there is resulting
Yes. Yes, we have a question for the uniting person. Where is he? Please come forward.
I'll just run through them.
Yes. These are what we're going to recommend to the local traffic committee, and we want to know your opinion about them.
Sure. Thank you.
The panel has been very concerned, especially having been on site this morning and met with residents about the potential for pedestrian injuries, vehicular accidents and so on in the laneway. Some of the things we're going to recommend to the local traffic committee include shared way treatments. We're not going to be very specific about what they may be, leave them to the technical experts. The possibility of a one-way traffic circulation in the laneway. And the imposition of a set speed limit, probably a maximum of 10 kilometres an hour. And all of this is just to make that space, which it appears has to remain a shared space, more safer. We're just wondering if the traffic committee goes ahead with doing some of these things, whether Uniting would be prepared to do the funding in the laneway in relation to those initiatives. For our record.
That's a very difficult question, given that we don't know the quantum of the works or the expense necessary to undertake the works. Perhaps I could answer the question in stages, if that was fine. You know, Uniting is a community service provider. We, you know, one of the things we do is try to support the community with the work that we do. So we absolutely agree with the recommendation that you're making to craft a shared zone in the space. It's something we have discussed with council, and unfortunately, it wasn't possible to get there during the course of the development application. So that's probably, we support the recommendation, and obviously we'd want to create the most safe space that we possibly could. I'm happy to caveat it with a level of reasonableness to the works that might be contained within crafting the shared zone or funding the shared zone works. You know, there is quite a percentage of affordable housing in this particular development as associated with the VPA and the necessary conditions of meeting the VPA. So we do feel as though we have given quite a lot through that particular process to get the outcome that we're getting already. And the development doesn't have, you know, we're a not-for-profit philanthropic service provider. We're not generating oodles of profit out of this particular activity. In fact, there are other alternatives to the site which would have been far more fruitful. So again, I come to the answer to your question is very difficult without knowing what the quantum of the works are that are being proposed, but certainly some element of those works we're comfortable with doing up to. I don't know what the particular dollar sum is. I'd have to go away and have a look at that and contemplate that as part of the feasibility of undertaking the works going forwards. But at this particular moment, it's an on-the-spot question, which I'm not sure how to answer. I'm sorry. Yeah, it is, because the quantum of works could mean anything in the public zone. I don't know how many services there are to move, what sort of guttering is necessary, how much road pavements are. I've got no idea whether there's level changes, what is desired in that crafting of the works. I know how long is a piece of string is twice as long from the end to the middle, but I don't know right now what that work entails, so it's quite a difficult item to provide an answer to. Sorry.
No, we weren't asking you to nominate a specific amount, because obviously in the community engagement process there's a lot of additional costing notification and so on, so that would be just an indication from you that a positive indication is fine.
Thank you.
You're satisfied with that?
Yep. Okay.
Okay. And announce what we want
to do. So the panel recommends the following to the local traffic committees for its consideration. One is the possibility of a one-way circulation system for vehicles in the laneway. Two is the possibility of shared way treatments. Yep, shared way. That's in inverted commas, the shared way. And the third is the imposition of a maximum of 10 kilometres per hour speed limit for vehicles. And this is to improve the general safety, particularly for pedestrians in and around the laneway.
All right, that I think is, as I've said, a unanimous determination of the panel. And that deals with item one, and thank you all for your attendance. So with that, we can move on to item two. Item two is an application for tree removal at a heritage site in 55 Holborough Street, Croydon. The panel unanimously adopts the recommendation for the removal of one tree and the retention of another. And the determination, therefore, is to adopt the recommendation. And again, we have to provide reasons for the decision. The reason, there's only one reason, that the panel supports the findings contained in the assessment report and endorses the reasons for the approval contained in that report.
Are we doing voting? Unanimous? All those in favour, etc.?
Oh, look, we don't have to do that for me. I've said it's unanimous.
Excellent.
Yeah. And that decision is unanimous. So we now move on to item three. This is the development at 88 Liverpool Road, Summerhill, on the corner of Grosvenor Crescent. I don't think anyone is here for that matter. Is anyone interested in that matter? You, who are you? You're the applicant. All right. Do you wish to speak? You support the recommendation? All right. Ms. Wharton, do you have any questions of the applicant?
The part of the development is the recommendation is to refuse the conversion of the commercial unit to the residential unit, and also the other part of the application is to convert the balcony enclosed areas to winter gardens, and you've seen the condition that's being proposed there.
Yes.
So it will. You can't have them fully enclosed. They'll have to be actually technically open balconies.
Yes.
And I think the council's recommendation has supported the third part of the application, which is to change the colour.
Yes.
So I don't have any questions, really.
No questions from me.
No questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think have to change some of the conditions, don't we, by removing dates and things?
Yeah. I think we've changed the condition is
page 142
needs to be reworded. The heading of condition 1D is incorrect. Needs to be changed to balconies not to be enclosed. I think we've already drafted this up, haven't we? Unit G's condition, so that heading has to be closed, has to be changed on condition 1D. And also we want to add the words to condition 1D that the change to the winter garden enclosures has to be shown prior to issue of the construction certificate. and also